I appreciate and admire people that are very good at their craft. And our next guest, the voice of the Raiders, and he does so much more, Greg Papa, who, by the way, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube, jiffyloopca.com, for big, powerful, valuable coupons in the area over 30 years. Check them out at jiffyloopca.com. Thing about Greg is, again, he's forgotten more about football than most people have ever learned. So I will start out by welcoming him in with this stat, Greg, that in Raider history, they have started out 3-0 on the road 5 times, and including this year. The previous 4 times they started out 3-0 on the road, they went to the AFC Championship game and lost. So can we just book the ticket now?
Well, but we don't want to lose.
No, I know.
Pittsburgh or New England.
Sure.
So I know the last time was 2000, and we lost the home game to Baltimore. Were there 3 other times in the 70s?
I have no idea. I just
did all that research, and you don't have a nugget like that.
Welcome to our show, Greg.
That's as far as it goes with me, Greg.
The problem was the Raiders went to the AFC Championship game every damn year, and they kept losing. I mean, that was a torment of Al Davis's life. Was he just could not get over that title game? You know, mainly it was Pittsburgh, but earlier it was Baltimore. They had an AFL championship game. The final game in the American Football League history was that game at home against Kansas City, and Otis Taylor caught a ball way out of bounds that would have been overturned by replay today. But back in 69, they didn't have replay, and the Raiders lost that one, you know, 17-7. Kansas City went on and won Super Bowl IV. They lost the AFL title game the year before to John Willie Namath, and Namath went the next week and beat the Baltimore Colts in Super Bowl III, one of the biggest games in the league history. So John Madden couldn't win that game except one time. Kenny Stabler couldn't win that game except one time. That's why it took him forever and for Snake after he was gone to get into Canton. So the plague of this franchise has been that AFL AFC championship game. This had not been able to win it, but if you told me right now we could go to the AFC championship game and lose, that'd be fun.
Yeah,
just where they've been, but you don't want to lose it. But that's something to keep an eye on. That's something to keep an eye on.
Well, and Greg, there's no denying the fact that Reggie McKenzie has really accumulated some great young players, brought in some veterans to put around, especially with what Crabtree did on Sunday. But I think one of the people, the rookies this year that people are excited about was Carl Joseph, and we've got to see him now for 2 straight games as a starter. And there was a new little wrinkle in this last game on Sunday. They're starting to use him more as a pass rusher from that safety position. What did you like there?
Well, they blitzed him. He's good. And they did blitz him a couple times the first game in Nashville. He's a guy that, when I watched him on tape in college, he was a fabulous player. I was really excited. I got a tip the Raiders were going to draft him that day, so I studied him, and I just loved him. He was just a ferocious headhunter. He would come from across the entire field and take your head off, strong and tough. He played the ball. He was just, you know, better than all those kids. And then when I first saw him in training camp, he just looked so little. You didn't realize he was that small on tape. I mean, he's like 5. They list him at 5, whatever they list him at, 5'10". He's shorter than me, and I'm like 5'9¼". He's 5'8", but he's thick. But the point is, as far as the blitzing, he's not a guy that you can just stick in the box close to the line of scrimmage and have him play the run, because these 330-pound men are going to get to him and lean on him. Mm-hmm. So you got to start him from what we call in the NFL football's depth, meaning back off the line, then you bring him down, and then he comes screaming at you with a head of steam. Now he's tough to deal with, and the Raiders have done a good job of that. They're mixing their safeties where, you know, one safety, Reggie Nelson's not there by himself. I remember you asking me before the season started, how are they going to use Reggie Nelson? And we didn't know because Reggie hadn't played. But they're using him now the way the Bengals used him. Reggie was not a guy that just sat in the middle of the field like Earl Thomas does in Seattle, and he takes the whole 53 1/3 width of the field. He's a guy you put on one hash, the other safety's on the other hash, because Reggie's older now, and they don't have to go laterally as far. And then with Carl, you'll see 42 start to come down right before the ball is snapped. When you watch Raiders on defense and TV likes to go tight and show you the line of scrimmage, and you don't see the safeties. So keep an eye on where they're coming from as far as the back of the Raider defense. And watch Carl Joseph. He will often come down, and he can come so fast from far away because he's fast, And also, he's little. So use that to an advantage where they can't quite see him. So if he's coming once the play starts, they may lose him, and he may be able to get in there. And he's tough. When if he's coming with speed, he will get you on the ground. So they did blitz him. They actually blitzed him in Nashville. Remember the play when Marcus Mariota fumbled? That was a Joseph blitz. He missed him. He kind of ran around him. He came from a kind of a swiping angle from the side, and he missed him. But he flushed him out, and then he chased him from the back. He did not give up on the play, and he was providing heat. When Mariota had the ball knocked away by Bruce Irvin, Carl was climbing up his back. So Carl's he's a tough guy. He will show up in the run game. He's the kind of guy, though, you have to start behind the line and then bring him forward, and also sometimes just leave him back and let him cover. But he's a good tackler. He's playing well. But to me, the biggest transformation in this defense is starting Corey James at middle linebacker. And I remember telling you back in training camp, you know, I like this guy. He's got to play more than Ben Heaney's better. But I didn't think he would take to it this fast. The first game in Nashville, they got him off the field in the nickel. They played him only in the base. But this last game, he didn't come off the field. And he made 15 tackles. 15! 12 unassisted, 3 he helped out a teammate or vice versa. That's a lot of tackles. And he's a good tackler. So inserting those two rookies, one's a round one pick, your 14th overall. The other guy's a sixth-round draft pick. When you pick a guy in the sixth round at linebacker, you're thinking he's going to contribute on special teams. Maybe he'll be able to mix in a couple of years. You don't expect that he's going to start in his third and fourth games in the NFL, and in his fourth game have 15 tackles. So Carl's playing really well, but Corey James has really helped to solidify the Raider middle of their defense, which was getting picked on the first 2 weeks of the year.
Yeah, I mean, that was a thin spot going into the season, Greg, and now, you know, you're running into depth issues there as well. And you brought up that nickel package. I'm kind of curious, in the AFC West, when you've got a West Coast team like Kansas City and you got Phillip Rivers who's going to sling it all over the yard, other than Denver, it's a pretty pass-happy type of division. Are we going to see more of that nickel package now that the linebacker depth isn't what it was?
Yeah, they play DJ Hayden a lot. They're in the nickel quite a bit. NFL teams last year, I think, were in their nickel. Nickel is when you play a third defensive back versus a third wide receiver, and the Raiders' nickel is DJ Hayden. So when DJ's on the field, they're going to be in their nickel. There's also a defense they play called a penny defense where they have still four defensive backs, but just one's a safety, Reggie Nelson, and they play three corners. And then they still stay with their heavy package to stop the run, because what teams do is they get you in the nickel. When you're in your nickel, that's more of your pass coverage lineup, then they run on you. So they're trying to get you into a certain defense. So, yeah, as I say, last year in the NFL, teams played their nickel. The only time you really play your base, and it's even not necessarily then, because you match up. Most of the time, teams play only their base in first and 10. And then out of that, you evolve. You know, if it's second and 7, you may stay in your base. If it's, you know, second and 17, you're going to get in your nickel. If it's third and 7, your nickel. And the beauty of football, and it's one element I wish TV would cover better, John Gruden starts to get into it when he talks about personnel groups, because the defense will match, the defensive personnel group will come in to match what the offense's personnel group is. And they have coaches in the press box with binoculars that just watch. The way to look at pro football, it's a lot like basketball. It's why it's fascinating to me. You have 11 guys on offense, right? So 5 are offensive linemen, and pretty much they're stationary objects. They don't move. Now, occasionally, the other day in Baltimore, they move the right tackle out like a wide receiver and the left tackle, and they kind of play with it with a bunch. So occasionally they'll try to screw with you, but basically you've got 5 stationary linemen, left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, right tackle. And then the quarterback is also stationary. He's the 6th guy. He's always there. Now, that's why the read option works so well, because he can become a player in the run game if you have a quarterback that can run and you run that offense. But let's just say you have, you know, 5 stationary guys, the big linemen, and the quarterback is 6. Then what personnel offensively do you use? Do you use 2 running backs and 1 tight end? That's known as 21 personnel. Then do the math. You have 5 eligibles left. 2 and 1 is 3. That means you have 2 wide receivers on the field. The Raiders have been using a package what's known as 10 personnel. You count the running back first, the tight end second. So 10 is 1 running back, no tight ends. So how many wide receivers are left? 4. That's an unusual offensive personnel package the Raiders started playing with that. That forces the opponents to get their dime back on the field, the nickel and the dime. So I'm giving you kind of a lecture on this, but it's just kind of – it's that is the fascinating element of the matchup game between defense and offense. And that's kind of the reason the Raiders were slow to get their defensive play calls in, is they were waiting for the offense to sub, and the coach upstairs would tell Ken Norton, 11 personnel. That means one back, one tight end, three wide receivers. Then you go to your nickel. If, you know, 22 personnel, two backs, two tight ends, big guys, then you got just one wide receiver on the field and you match up with a heavy package. So you match up with what the offense does personnel groups. But I think the Raiders have gotten away from that a little bit, and they're playing down in distance now. We don't care what personnel group you're in, because you could take those tight ends and make them wide receivers. You just call an audible at the line. They all go flexed out. And now we're not, you know, we got a defensive end over a tight end. That's not a good matchup. So you're just more playing it on, it's 3rd and 8. We're going to play our defense and just think you're going to pass. And if you run it, we got to rally up and tackle. So that is the real chess match of football that people don't really understand. But it's a simple concept when you look at it. And it's the first thing I look at every single play. What offensive package is on the field? And then how does the defense matching up? Are they going to a nickel, a dime? Are they staying in their base? It's really the game within the game of football.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, as Greg Papa joins us on KHTK, the other part of it is, too, if you are just playing down in distance, as you said that they've been playing recently, I mean, they've got all kinds of tendencies on that, so they have a pretty good idea of what personnel they'll face, right?
Yeah, but they'll try to get you, and they got tendencies on your defense. Now, the big adjustment, I think, from the Raiders proceeding forward is Corey James is not a great cover guy. And they're going to pick on him. So they got away with playing him almost every snap defensively. I don't know if he came off the field at all last game in Baltimore. But other teams will see him and say, well, if they're going to leave 57 on the field all plays, then we're going to attack him. We're going to make him cover. We're going to bring a running back on a circle route into his area, give him a little stutter. And that's the one area of his game. He plays fast coming to tackle guys, but he's not necessarily an agile athlete where he can move side to side. And if he gets matched up, like if he ever got matched up on one of the two Raider small running backs, Jalen Richard or DeAndre Washington, he'd get cooked. He could not cover that kind of guy. And other teams have players, you know, like him. You know, San Diego's without Danny Woodhead, he got hurt playing the Chargers on Sunday. But Dexter McCluster can do that. They can line him up in the backfield and kind of screw with you. So, yeah, you know their tendencies, but they know your tendencies. And then the beautiful part of football is they will break their tendencies. That's why I think it's like Sean Smith sometimes. He studies so much film and video, and he's kind of, what I call it is, and Carson Palmer had this problem when he was the Raider quarterback, you're playing the game on Wednesday where you're looking at all their video from their previous games, and you're sitting there late at night on a Wednesday, and you say, oh, I when they do this, they're going to do that. I'll be ready for it. Well, they know that you've seen when they do this, they're going to do that. So you know what? They're going to do this and not do that. They're going to do this. And you have to play the game. It's going to move. It's a fluid game. And they're going to screw with you. So they purposely set you up. So you have to study tendencies and have an idea. But you got to be careful that they're not just showing you that, because they know you watch the video, and now they're going to trap you. So that's the fascinating game. You want to be prepared and overly prepared. But then you want to be fluid where, you know, not necessarily is he going to run that. They show that route, you know, they're going to run these routes when these guys line up this way. But they may not do that this time. So just be ready in case they don't do it.
Greg Papa joining us on KHTK. Thanks, as always, to Jiffy Lube for making that possible. Got to ask you, Greg, before our time is up, I gave my guarantee earlier today as a diehard Giants fan. I'm guaranteeing it. The even streak stops tonight. You can't beat Thor at home. Oh. Madison Bumgarner they've used him too much. Yeah, I got all my lucky jerseys out and everything. I don't want to tempt fate. But how do you see the game
going? Why are you bailing now, Dave?
No, Greg, this is his method. It's like the reverse jinx.
So either way, he wins. If they lose, I told you so. We're going out of Chicago. Is that it?
Yeah, no, you can't do that the next day. That's dirty pool. But honestly, tonight, it's Bumgarner and pray for a rain delay, really, here. How do you match it?
I think they're good. They're going to have the one thing I think proceeding forward is how they use Jeff Samardzija.
Yep.
Ty Block was so good Saturday against Clayton Kershaw. I want that guy pitching against the Cubs. And that, you know, he would pitch in a game four. So I and Samardzija, they just came out with a playoff roster before I jumped on with you. Samardzija and Cueto are both in play tonight. So if Mad Bum is just not good early, and he's given up home runs. You know, he's not been as locked in as you think. And I worry about Cespedes, and Yoenis is so far off the plate, it's hard to get in on him. But anyway, if Bum struggles, and he might, you know, he's a human being, then I think they go to Cueto early. There's also a theory where I'd love to see him just throw Samardzija in the bullpen and use like Randy Johnson in 95, where he just blows hard. He can pitch every playoff game. And let him go in the sixth, seventh, whenever the starter's got to come out.
Has experience there, too, Greg, too. That's how it started.
What he did in Chicago. He hasn't done it in a while, so it's a little bit of a risk to do that in the playoffs. But I think Samardzija would be great at it. And I want Ty Block to face the Cubs. Now, that's getting ahead of itself.
Sure.
Tonight, I'll just tell you this. I've been watching Noah Syndergaard for like 48 straight hours. He's the hardest throwing pitcher maybe I've ever seen. I mean, J.R. Richard threw really hard. Nolan Ryan threw really hard. But I don't know if this guy will throw average 98. I think he'll be so amped up tonight. He'll hit 99, 100, 101. That's his four-seam fastball. His two-seam fastball is just, it's as fast. It's not any different. The four-seamer, it's the way you grip it, and the two-seamer sinks. So the two-seamer for most guys is 3 or 4 miles per hour slower than the four-seamer. His is not. He will hit 98 with a four-seamer, come right back with a 97 two-seamer that's moving crazy. His slider is 90. It averages 92. I've seen some 94. So his slider tonight will be faster, harder than Bumgarner's fastball. But you know what? I always say about basketball players, everybody gets enamored about great plays. That doesn't make him a great player. And this guy is a hard, hard thrower. I'm trying to figure out if he's a great pitcher. He might be. He just might be. He might be tonight, but I think he doesn't quite have the nuances of changing speeds and setting you up like the other long-haired guy, Jacob DeGrom, who I think is a great pitcher. That guy is a tremendous pitcher. If they were going against him, I'd be a little more concerned. Syndergaard, now all that being said, he could shove tonight, two-hit shutout, you don't touch him. He could punch out 14, and he's just too fast, and you can't get to him. But the Giants have always been a good fastball-hitting team. The numbers show they're not quite as good this year. I think they'll be fine. I think they're going to hit this guy. I do. I just don't think he's quite refined enough. He has enough wrinkles, so he's the hardest thrower, certainly, in the game today. He's like a reliever. He's like a short guy. He's got to come in like Goose Gossage. But I just don't know if he's a great pitcher yet. He may get there in time. It'll throw his change up a little bit in his curveball, but mainly he's going to come at you hard. And I just don't think hard always impresses the Giants, and I think they'll find a way to hit this guy tonight.
Greg Papa, courtesy of Jiffy Lube, joins us every week. This has got to have been as fun a year for you as you've had in a while, calling those Raider games, and we've been enjoying the hell out of it on our ends.
Yeah, two in a row at home.
Yes, sir.
I issued a proclamation or a request for the team the other day. No more losses at home.
No.
Could they win all the – I mean, if they go on the road and win three, you go to Baltimore, that's really impressive. They should not allow teams to come into Oakland anymore and beat them. And last year they were 3-5 under Jack. They were a 500 road team, and they lost to Atlanta. Atlanta's pretty good. We're going to see how good Atlanta is. They got Denver and Seattle the next two games. But in the game against Denver, that's the one you got to circle, right? November the 6th, that Sunday nighter against the Broncos, that's going to be huge. That could be a tough one. But any other game, they should not allow teams to come into the black hole and beat them anymore. They're that good of a team. They're starting to be like the Warriors, where they're just one day, they're going to take this league over. It may not be today, but tomorrow's coming fast. And I think they have to get the mentality that no more. No more do teams come into the black hole and beat them. That is not going to happen anymore.
We will talk to you 1 week from today, hopefully with another win in the belt. Thanks,
Greg. All
right,
guys, have fun.